Who is the greatest basketball player of all time? Should LeBron James even be a part of that conversation? And why is he so hated? As he nears retirement, what will his legacy be? And does anyone else feel like the NBA's best days are behind it? Or are you just old? Well, my guest today tackles these and other questions in a conversation that ultimately transcends basketball and raises deeper questions about American culture and society at large. Jay Skapanak graduated magna cum laude from Penn State with a BA in journalism and double minors in English and law. He went on to cover sports for Blue and White Illustrated and the Pittsburgh Tribune. Now, fast forward many years later, after making money in the tech world, he decided he was fed up with the state of mainstream sports media and the direction of pro sports in general. Now, just over 1 year later, his Scap Attack YouTube channel has amassed over 12 million views and 46,000 subscribers. And so he is just getting started. We had a great conversation about LeBron versus Jordan, the greatness of Kobe Bryant, and what made Jordan and Kobe different from guys like LeBron, about whether or not our culture is even capable of producing men like Jordan or Kobe anymore. It's a great conversation. You're gonna love it. But first, however you're consuming this podcast, be it Spotify, Apple, wherever you prefer to scratch your CDP itch, make sure to leave a like, a comment, or a review if you're nasty. If you're watching on YouTube, I deeply appreciate you if you subscribed. And as always, you can help this podcast and this community grow by sharing this show as much as possible. If you love it, share it with your friends. If you hate it, share it with your enemies. And I know that it's rough out there, so I thank you for all of your support. I've been turning the ads off on these podcasts because, frankly, they're annoying, and my biggest videos keep getting demonetized anyway. So if you enjoy my work and would like to and are able to support me, there are multiple ways. For a few bucks, you can buy me a protein bar. You can become a paid subscriber to my newsletter, support me on Locals, tip me via Twitter, Venmo, or Cash App, or support my affiliates. All the links will be in the show notes. That concludes this housekeeping. Now, please enjoy my conversation with Jay Skapanak. Jay Skapanak of Scap Attack. Now I'm so excited to talk to you, but I got to start off with a quick anecdote and a question. So a few probably a couple of months ago, I went to my first ever live NBA basketball game, and I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. It was the Hawks versus the Warriors. We had some great box seats. The atmosphere was electric. Trey Parker was in fine form. Steph Curry scored 60. It was my first ever game, and I was like, this is electric. I became a lifetime fan. And at the same time, I go home, and these videos bubble up on my YouTube algorithm from this guy who is just laying into the National Basketball Association and LeBron James specifically, and Adam Silver and everybody. So I guess my first question for you, Jay Skapanak, with who's only been doing videos for a year but already has over 10 million views, so you've obviously struck a chord. What I'm like a lifetime fan now of NBA basketball. What am I missing?
So it's interesting. I grew up in not to age myself because I like to think that I'm still young at heart, but I was born in the mid 80 range. And I grew up in I'm a child of the 90s. So I was young when I was growing up, but I grew up on Michael Jordan. I watched him live. And then right when he was kind of retiring and I was getting into my teenage years, I was like 11 or 12 years old when Kobe Bryant entered the league. And I kind of segued right from Michael Jordan into Kobe Bryant and really grew up in the early 2000s, early mid and late 2000s. And that was kind of the dead ball era of basketball. Defense was like at a high point at that time. League-wide scoring in the 2003-2004 season, so 20 years ago, was just 93 points per game. It was 114 points per game today. So just 20 years later, scoring has inflated to such a degree that it is 20 points per game higher on average, you know, per night in today's association. So because I was of a different era and a different generation when I started watching basketball, I see many of the flaws inherently today. The lack of defense that has been litigated from the league offices on high, the overall mentality of the individual players as a whole to want to compete and defend at that level. So basically, inherently, like, statistics, scoring, everything is completely out of whack today. Everything is substantially inflated. So I kind of see the flaws, and it's really only because, this is my big beef, I'm getting to it right now, is the kids today. I'm gonna get on my porch swing and become a curmudgeonly old guy and just talk about how, you know, I walked up the hill both ways to school in the snow and how everything was better in my day. I grew up, like I said, on Jordan, Kobe, but I had the ability to critically analyze previous eras and previous generations that came before me. So I have always given a lot of praise and credit to the great players from the 80s, the 70s, and the 60s that I couldn't personally watch myself. Today, the youth today, and this isn't just with sports, it's with everything in general in my estimation, they are a prisoner of the moment to the degree that everything that they're experiencing now has to be the best ever. It's the best that's ever been. And it's really funneled into the sports realm and into basketball in particular, where everybody that we're watching, the LeBron Jameses, the Steph Currys, these kids today are just so obsessed with this era, and they have blinders on to anything that came before it. So I am that beacon of light. I am that voice of reason that is hearkening back to the previous generations and eras and saying, hey, let's pump the brakes here a little bit and recognize the greatness that preceded what we're seeing now.
Well, a very modest individual as well.
You know, part of my job as an artist is understanding the world around me, but with all the bias and noise, it's tough to make sense of anything. Enter Ground News. For pennies a month, this amazing aggregator brings you the hottest current events from outlets all over the world, left, right, and center, and emails you every day to shine light on your blind spots, stories you might have missed due to your own biases. You can install their web extension to learn which way a news site leans and download the Ground News app to get your news on the go. I love this service, friends, and I'm happy to provide loyal listeners of the Clifton Duncan podcast 15% off of an already unbeatable price. Head on over to check.ground.news/Clifton Duncan. Again, head to check.ground.news/Clifton Duncan to get 15% off of Ground News. Get yourself a bird's eye view on world events.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I get these, you know, notifications in my phone, and these scores now are like, you know, it's 120 to 114, 130 to whatever. And even myself, I just told you before we began recording that I'm pretty much a basketball normie. I'm just beginning to learn who all the star players are, what the great teams are. You know, I just love watching the game. But at the same time, I do remember it used to be a big deal when a game went over 100 points. And now it's all the time. So I guess the question for you that I have for you is that, isn't that more exciting basketball? Like, shouldn't it be theoretically more exciting? It's more offense, there's higher scoring. We get to see more dunks. There's more three pointers now. We get to see, players like Steph Curry emerge. And then we get to see players like Luka Doncic, you know, just racking up points. So what's so bad about the high scores these days?
So, and it's not just the NBA. It's really, it's across all major professional sports in the United States of America right now. Particularly, I'm really big into the NBA and the NFL. So I'm noticing it most in those two. But the NFL is undergoing the same kind of trajectory right now. When you look at, I guess there's really nothing bad. It's just from an aesthetic standpoint, like, what do you prefer to see? Do you like defensive battles? Do you like high scoring offensive affairs? Really, what I'm talking about, though, is competition. I like to see players competing at both ends as hard as they can. It's been lost in today's NBA, and scoring is just really, it's just so blown out now that it's kind of depreciating previous legends. I think my major problem isn't necessarily with the way the product looks and the aesthetics of it and the enjoyment level necessarily. It's that we're not giving that credence and that respect to the players that came before. So I referenced Kobe Bryant. In Kobe Bryant's entire, he played 20 seasons. He came in the 97 season, retired in like 2017. So he played 20 seasons. In the crux of his prime, league-wide scoring for the decade that he was in his prime was at 96 points per game. Now, Luka Doncic has been in the NBA for, I believe this is his fifth season. Scoring averages over his 5 years now are like at around 113 points per game. So there's a fundamental disconnect here. People look at what Luka is doing right now. He averaged, led the league in scoring this year, 34.9 points per game this season, in a season where league averages was at 114. Kobe Bryant led the league in scoring in the 2006 season at 35 points per game. League-wide scoring was 96. So when I look at those things and I see, well, Kobe Bryant's scoring more than Luka Doncic in a league that's roughly 20 points per game slower. I'm talking pace-wise was slower. There's fewer possessions in the games. And there's you know, more stringent defensive rules at that time. Players just compete by and large more at that time. So, you know, people look at the overall snapshot of Kobe Bryant's career averages and statistical accomplishments and say, oh, well, 25 points per game, 5 assists, 5 rebounds. I mean, this guy's a bum. Look at Shai Gilgeous-Alexander this year. Led to, you know, third in the league in scoring, 30 points per game, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. People look at his season this year, SGA with the Oklahoma City Thunder, and they're like, oh, well, you know, 25-year-old Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is already better than prime Kobe because, bam, look at this stat, you know, from this year and this stat from this year. You have to take in all, the whole picture of it, put it all in context. And really, this is, I'm talking about all eras, essentially, until this one. The 1960s are basically the only era from a pace standpoint and a free range standpoint on the court that is really applicable to what we're seeing today and within the last like 3 to 5 years. And when you look at the 1960s, you had Will Chamberlain running around the league, averaging 50 points per game for a season. Oscar Robertson had his famed triple-double in that decade of the 60s. I mean, Elgin Baylor is an afterthought in that decade. He has like 37 points per game, 17 rebound per game seasons right there in the thick of things in the 60s. So today, people are so dismissive of the 60s because, oh, era-specific changes. We can't possibly compare those athletes to the athletes that are playing today. Yet, we're comfortable with comparing a guy like Kobe Bryant, who played in a league that was 95, 96 points per game, with guys today who are playing, you know, in a pace that is more applicable to the 1960s. So if you like watching the free-flowing game today, and I get it, it's fun to see all the threes, which again are at an all-time high. You know, we're up, you know, probably out 25 three-point shots per game on average from the last decade. It's fun. I get it. It's wide open and free-flowing, but can we then not compare today's players to the players of the past then, or just give the proper homage to those players from the past? That's pretty much all I'm saying.
Well, it is interesting because we're pretty much the same age, and you never want to get to that point where you're the old man screaming at all these kids. But, you know, just like you, I also grew up in the era of Jordan, and, you know, I watched my younger brother, is a basketball nerd and was a pretty good player himself. And we sat there and watched the Last Dance documentary. And for those who were not alive during that period and don't understand the phenomenon that Michael Jordan was, you know, I mean, sure, it's not to dismiss people like Wilt Chamberlain and Elgin. I love you brought up Elgin Baylor, you know, the flyest NBA player ever. And these guys. And, you know, I also, it's Magic and Bird and these kinds of people, but it was Michael Jordan, I think, that became this worldwide phenomenon. And really, I think in a lot of ways, as a normie, transformed the NBA into what it is today. He helped the NBA become what it is today. And it seems like a lot of people are chasing that shadow. I mean, Kobe was interesting. And I see he often gets sort of overlooked. Like, he and Larry Bird kind of get overlooked in the GOAT debates. It's either Jordan or LeBron, whom we'll get to later. I'm sure it's your favorite subject. But it is really interesting that there is this tendency I see among younger people to just, they want to pretend like everything that is happening now is the first time it's ever happened and they're making history, and that everyone who came before was some kind of a bum. And it's like, well, you know, I mean, I focus on art in this channel. And what you do is, if, when you read old literature, you see that human beings have been the same for thousands of years. And I'm like, you know, I kind of feel like, I'm pretty sure guys like Wilt Chamberlain and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar were just as heavyweight competitors and just as smart. They may have been playing a different game, but it's so weird to see people just say, oh, these old, they're a bunch of plumbers, I think is what they keep calling them. And I'm like, no, these guys, these are real guys and human beings, and who played their hearts out and played their asses off. And it's so bizarre to see that kind of dismissed now.
Yeah, it's an interesting, you say LeBron's my favorite topic. He actually is my favorite topic only by extension of Kobe Bryant, because I saw Kobe Bryant play when he was in high school. I'm about 7 years younger than he was. And then I was at his last game ever in Staples Center when he scored 60 points on Utah in the walk-off game. Amazing. And he is Kobe. Actually, you can see him over my shoulder right here. Kobe Bryant is not just by far easily my favorite NBA player ever. He's my favorite athlete ever. And just probably like my personal hero in general. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I grew up watching him just dominate the NBA. And yet LeBron James came in as a young, unproven kid who had done nothing at that stage of his career and was usurping that title from Kobe, really completely and totally undeservingly. So I kind of got that chip on my shoulder back in my, you know, like early 20s. And I've just kind of, LeBron and I are basically the same age. So I've kind of followed his entire career and been a critic of from afar, because look, when the conversation elevates and the bar raises, then you have to, you know, I think you have to then judge him under that lens. But to your point, sorry to get off on that Kobe tangent. To your point, it's interesting because yes, the plumber title kind of came about in essentially to combat Jordan and Jordanites for the LeBron stand base, because they, you know, want to marginalize, because Jordan's accomplishments exceed what LeBron is ever going to be able to accomplish, even in probably almost twice as long by the time he retires. What they've decided to do is attack the level of competition that Michael Jordan faced. And that's where this plumber narrative kind of grew from. But the amusing thing today is what's happening. Steph Curry essentially was kind of a co-era dominator of that 2010 span. With LeBron, Steph Curry, a 6'3" guard who could barely dunk a basketball. And now, right, what you're seeing, the league leader in scoring this year, who nearly averaged a 35 point per game triple double, is Luka Doncic, who again is not, you know, blazing the world on fire with his athleticism. And in my estimation, the best player by a long shot in today's NBA is Nikola Jokic.
Joker.
And yeah. He is an absolute marginal athlete at best. He was a second round draft pick. And in the NBA, you typically don't even make rosters when you're a second round pick. He was drafted famously during a Taco Bell commercial in the second round during his draft. And when they came back to ESPN studios to discuss the pick, the major criticism of him was athleticism. So, and now here we are, this guy is absolutely lighting the league on fire. I mean, he's on a trajectory to become one of these next hierarchical kind of a GOAT kind of conversation guy. He's probably going to be top 10 to 15 all time when it's said and done. And he could barely jump over a phone book. So now the plumber narrative's kind of being dispelled by these subpar athletes that are now destroying the NBA.
You know, it's so fascinating because I love that you brought up Jokic, because he's somebody, he reminds me kind of it's sort of like how I feel when I see Usain Bolt run, because this is someone who, like his Usain Bolt, for those who love track and field or athletics, as it's called overseas, you know, his form is so sloppy. He looks, when I love watching him run, because he looks like a kid in Jamaica just running on some hills. And meanwhile, all these other athletes, their form is so tight. They're so mechanical. And then there's just Bolt just wobbling around the track and, you know, dissipating all this energy and still blowing away the rest of the world, you know, on the field. And with Jokic, I'm like, this dude looks like a random, like an extra in a movie somewhere where he's playing a bouncer. And yet every time he gets the ball, you just know that your team's going to score some points. And so it's not, and the same thing with Luka, the guy, I just watch him. I'm just like, there's something, he's playing on a different level. And the stuff that him and Kyrie are doing right now is just unbelievable. And so what the question I'm getting at, as I'm lavishing praise on these athletes, is that, you know, we look at guys like Jordan, we look at guys like Kobe, we look at guys like Doncic and Jokic, and just like the comparison between Jokic and LeBron, because I look at LeBron and, you know, I see someone who is, what, he's 39 now, right? Almost, or is he 40 now?
He's 39. He'll be 40 in December.
And, you know, as we're recording this, they've just lost game two to the Nuggets. But that said, I was very impressed by what LeBron, he still is athletic. And I've always viewed him as someone who, you know, someone who was that size should not be that explosive, that fast, that agile. What an incredible athlete. And yet, he's still kind of, you have a super athlete like Jordan or Kobe, and a marginal athlete like Jokic. And yet they're both winning. And then you have someone like LeBron, who's the chosen one, who seems to have all the athletic gear. I mean, incredible, amazing physical specimen. And yet there's something else. There just seems to be that one thing that is not missing. So what differentiates a GOAT like a Jokic or a Kobe or a Jordan versus what we're being told is a GOAT like LeBron? Does that question make sense?
It's a great question, and it's a question that's been being asked for, I mean, at least a decade, but that has been being discussed even before then, when you go back to 2000, probably 6-7 range. And really, the answer is not like a finite or a quantifiable one, to be totally honest with you, because it is that intangible, that thing that you can't really quantify, but something that you feel and that you see and that you can just sense it. It's that killer instinct, that alpha mentality, that drive to just do it at the time when your team needs it the most. And it's this premise, of course, of clutch, which, you know, many people, LeBron fans today, will dismiss as fanboy speculation or, you know, old head rantings. But it's just so utterly true that this premise, this thing of this clutch thing does exist. Not just in basketball, but in all sports. And the way everybody probably defines clutch a little bit differently, the way I define clutch is there are three types of players. And I don't know, you might have heard this premise before because I might be kind of paraphrasing or borrowing it. But in my estimation, there's three types of players in every sport. When we are in clutch time, which is defined as winning time in a must win or a pivotal, a game of very, a great magnitude or importance. There are players in that situation that get worse. There are players in that situation that stay the same and they just play as if they always play. And then there are players that elevate and get even better in those moments. If you just stay the same, you are an all-time great. If you get better, you're the greatest of all time. You're a legend. And LeBron James is a paradox because he is a great basketball player and he is simultaneously overrated because he is not at that top tier. He is not in the Jordan conversation because he lacks those intangibles. He's the one that gets worse when the moments are at their biggest, when the stage is the biggest and the lights are the brightest. He's the one that shrinks. And 46 minutes, a night, 47 minutes a night, he is brilliant. And he has true brilliance to his game. He's arguably the greatest athlete I've ever seen in terms of like raw physical athleticism. And, you know, there's speculation swirling abound about potential performance enhancers. Regardless, his maintenance level at this stage and age is unparalleled. Like, no matter what he's doing or using or not doing, to be maintaining this level of physical ability at nearing 40 is absolutely unprecedented. It is incredible. If you want to give this guy praise for all of those things, you can. But for me, winning is the most important thing. It is the most important metric in every sport, and it is the most important of the four major professional American sports in basketball, because you're one of five players. You play both ways. You can control your destiny more, as a great star player in the NBA controls their destiny more than any single player in any single other sport. And therefore, winning has always been the conversation from the dawn of time of basketball. Will Chamberlain was substantially more physically dominant. He was better at everything from a statistical standpoint than Bill Russell. Yet in the 60s, we routinely say Bill Russell owned that decade and owned that era because he was a winner. He got it done. Did he maybe have better teams? Sure, you can argue that he had better players surrounding him. But when he and Wilt played, he always somehow got the better of Wilt. Therefore, Wilt is never generally regarded as being a superior player to Russell. Yet somewhere along the line in today's era, we take LeBron James, who has failed time and time again in big, high leverage pressure moments, and we continually coddle him. We make excuses for him. And now we have just altered the conversation and the way that we judge these other players because he can't win. Now, all of a sudden, it's a team sport. You know, now we have to look and critically analyze the supporting cast. And look, LeBron James has largely had good supporting casts. I would argue the Lakers roster for roster, they're superior to the Nuggets. Yet the Nuggets have won 10 consecutive games against them and are looking to beat them for a second playoff run in a row and potentially win a second championship. And Jokic is doing it with less help, in my estimation, than LeBron James has currently.
Twin Engine Coffee is grown in the gorgeous sunny mountains of Nicaragua, where it's selected, roasted, and packaged before being shipped right to your door. Not only is their bold and aromatic coffee delicious, Twin Engine also employs farmers, tasters, printers, retailers, packers, suppliers, and artists in the local community. Did you know that 99% of the world's coffees are grown in the world's poorest countries? Well, by purchasing Twin Engine Coffee, you are not only treating yourself to the best cup of joe around, you are helping these wonderful people to lift themselves out of poverty. Support small business, support the Clifton Duncan podcast, and support the good people of Nicaragua by ordering from twinenginecoffee.com/Clifton Duncan. Again, that is Twin Engine Coffee at twinenginecoffee.com/Clifton Duncan.
So, you know, I'm kind of dancing around this question, but, you know, because LeBron has been held up as he is the guy, he is the GOAT, and, you know, you have to respect he's been in for 20 years at this point, but a lot of what I see on at least NBA YouTube, there's this ferocious debate about him being the GOAT. But I also see this sort of, I don't want to say darker strain, but a sort of heavier aspect of the conversation, which is the legacy that LeBron will leave on the NBA and his larger impact. And I know you have thoughts about that, but if we look at the Jordan era, and how just massive of a star he was, and how he got a lot of people turned on to the game of basketball. What, in your estimation, is LeBron's legacy and how he's impacted the NBA in the long term?
So LeBron James is going to be the first player in a very long time that is going to leave the league worse than the one that he inherited. And that's really a stunning statement to make. When you look at the real dark ages of the NBA, where the 1970s, league appeal and popularity were at all-time historic lows in the 70s. And then in 79, Magic and Bird came in and they uplifted the whole sport. They essentially created the NBA, the modern day NBA kind of. They were the forefathers of really building the popularity of it and putting it on the map in the United States of America. And then Jordan comes in 84, right in the middle of it. And he really transcends it and uplifts it to really, unforeseen and unimagined heights, make globalizes the game with the 92 Dream Team that he led. I mean, really, we're seeing the impact and the ramifications of that 92 Dream Team to this day now, as it becomes a true global sport. And quite frankly, the best players, like the five best players in today's NBA, are all foreign born. So that is all just the fingerprints of Michael Jordan. The league popularity was insane. I mean, there were guys, Jordan's finals series games individually were getting 25, 30 million viewers per game back in the late 90s. His last game, the 1998 walk-off where he scored 45, won his sixth and final championship, that got 36 million viewers for that game. The LeBron James final in 2020 in the Orlando bubble setup, not one of those games broke 9 million views per game. So the league is drastically, it's at a low point right now from a popularity standpoint. You know, we had Christmas games this year getting under 2 million views. There were two Christmas games that got less than 2 million views. The All-Star game got only 5 million views. Caitlin Clark's, she had three games go into the teens. She had like 14 million views against LSU. Then against UConn in the Final Four, she had, I think it was like 15 or 16. Then she had 19 million in the championship. 19 million views is the most viewed basketball game in the last 5 years at any level, including the NBA at any of those rounds and finals appearances.
Just to jump in really quickly for those who don't know, Caitlin Clark is this electrifying basketball player. She reminds me of Steph Curry with ovaries, but she's a college women's basketball player and her games have just been breaking ratings records. She's making all this money. And so that's the person that Mr. Skapanek is referencing. So please continue. Sorry.
No, absolutely. But it's just, and it's, look, this is not in any way to diminish women's athletics in any way. But, you know, 10, 15 years ago, if you suggested that a college women's basketball game was outdrawing LeBron James's NBA finals, where he won his fourth championship by double or triple in some instances, it would be absolutely mind-boggling. So really, I only invoke that comparison to show just really how unpopular the NBA is. But ultimately, I'm not about popularity. I'm about product. And if the product's still good and no one's watching, ultimately, who cares? All you can do is put the best product forth that you can. But the other thing that LeBron is going to be really remembered for is he's kind of the father of this era of player empowerment, where, you know, he has jumped kind of from team to team, become kind of, I like to call him a ring chasing mercenary, because he just jumps markets and teams every 4 years. He kind of holds his, general managers hostage and just kind of siphons them and forces them to build teams around him. Then at the last second leaves and, you know, they're in the lurch, their teams set back years as he jumps to some new championship ready team that he can run and chase more rings with. And what happened, it's really interesting. Everyone credits LeBron with creating the super team in 2011 when he leaves Cleveland, his initial team that drafted him. He spent 7 years there, couldn't win anything, did not tell his organization that he was leaving. He went on this decision, this big ESPN-produced special where he announced to the world and the Cleveland Cavaliers that he was leaving and taking his talents to South Beach, where he teamed up with Dwayne Wade, who was at the time a top 3 to 4 player in the league. They recruit Chris Bosh to come down. He was probably a top 15 player at the time. They get a smattering of role players surrounded, amass this big super team, still fail 2 times out of 4. And then LeBron jumps to Cleveland, back to Cleveland to create another super team. Well, see, here's the funny thing that happened though along the way. Steph Curry and Kevin Durant were watching. They saw LeBron James jumping around from team to team, recruiting friends, bringing in superstars to play alongside him. And Kevin Durant became a free agent in 2016 and was like, hey, why can't I not do the same thing? Steph Curry flew from Golden State to New York to recruit Kevin Durant onto a 73 win team from the year prior. And Kevin Durant, seeing the precedent that LeBron James set, let's sign on the line that is dotted, and they formed this juggernaut super team. And it's ironic because LeBron played that team then subsequently in the next few finals, probably championships he would have won had he not created the beast of the super team that then slayed him. And then once Durant and Curry made that decision, the whole league broke forth. And we have this whole era now where players are just demanding trades and not playing out contracts. James Harden has done it over and over again. And that is going to be credited, in my estimation, in revisionism now. When we look back in history, LeBron James is the one that kickstarted that whole ball of trash rolling down the hill. And that's when you couple, people are just tired of that kind of player empowerment and kind of holding their teams hostage, not playing the defense. When you add it all up, that is why these aforementioned ratings are on the decline to such degree. And LeBron is the king of this era, and he is the guy that's most accountable for all of these things.
Well, wow, so much that you said there. You know, it is interesting because I look at these players today and they're getting signed out of high school, out of college on these multi-million dollar contracts. And I'm thinking to myself, now again, I'm a normie, but it wasn't always like that. And I wonder if there's an issue where the players, I mean, obviously you want to attract the best talents in the world, but at the same time, it's like, does it do anything to these young players to just throw all this money at them? And so, didn't Jordan had to earn his millions, didn't he? I mean, he didn't come into 84, you know, breaking his foot and then, you know, here's, you know, $100 million over like 5 years. He had to work his way up. So I wonder if that's part of maybe if there's not as much, competitive spirit that's in addition to like the lack of defense, but also watching teams grow together over time and building that chemistry with one another. It seems like that, I feel like if you were a player who was taking more of the long view, it's like, okay, look, we're not there yet, but we got a lot of great guys and we just got to figure out how to play together. And then that's how we'll work it out. And if you're jumping around from team to team, it seems to me, like you're going to keep breaking that chain. And then if I'm management or from the ownership, how am I going to be able to trust this player? If I'm going to be sleeping with one eye open, like, are they going to leave at some point? So I guess the question I'm getting at is, do you see the trend stopping? I mean, who's responsible for it? If it's having such a negative impact on the league, then why is it allowed to continue? Like, I have so many questions.
Yeah. You know, and I hate to crawl back out of the chair and back onto my porch swing and turn and spray the hose on the young kids again.
No, you don't.
but I really, truly do believe that it's generational in some degree. I think, some of it probably has to do with the proliferation and the rise of social media over the span, really the younger years of life of these players and these athletes that are now populating major sports leagues today. It's just become they're more obsessed and concerned with their celebrity, the money, the commercials, the endorsements and everything. And kind of, you know, winning is just an afterthought. You know, I look back again, I hate to go to over my left shoulder back to Kobe Bryant, but this guy, his mentality was just different from what the kids of this generation were. When Kobe Bryant was in his age 34 season, the Lakers were coming off of two straight championships in 2009 and 2010, and they came up against the Dallas Mavericks, and Kobe's knee was highly depreciated in that series. Did not play a good series. His supporting cast did not play a good series. They lost. That was the team, the Mavericks team, that ultimately went on to beat that Miami Heat super team in that first finals run in 2011. But Kobe Bryant stepped to the post game. No, it wasn't the post game presser, but it was his exit interview with LA, with the Laker media the next day. And before he took any questions, he just apologized to the fans and for the lackluster performance in the series. And he made a vow to them that he was committed to work harder than he ever has before, get better than he ever has been. And that more or less he used this, I'm paraphrasing, but that he wasted an entire year of his life, because any season that ended without him winning a championship was a complete and utter failure. This was 34-year-old Kobe Bryant, worth hundreds of millions of dollars at the time, five-time NBA champion. He was good. His legend and legacy was already blazed. And he still was looking at it and had that mentality. Now you transpose that with LeBron James when he lost that first finals in 2011 with the super team Miami Heat. They had lost James had personally lost two finals. He was 0-2 at that point. And the question came across to him, LeBron, how does it make you feel that people are reveling now in your failure, that you can't get it done? And LeBron's answer was, I'm good. I'm a rich, famous celebrity athlete. I'm living my dream right now. They're going to hate their lives tomorrow, and I'm just going to keep on living the dream. And Kevin Durant echoed that kind of a response, you know, a couple years ago when he was eliminated. You know, he said, I'm a winner. You know, I might lose year in and year out, but I'm a winner. I'm a great basketball player, and I'm making money and just having fun and doing it and living my life. These are very contrasting mentalities and outlooks. So now, some might say, look, Kobe Bryant, that's an unhealthy outlook. That's an unhealthy mentality to have. Whereas these players today, maybe they have more balance and so forth, and they put things in perspective better. But then I would challenge you with this. That's why Kobe Bryant is Kobe Bryant. That's why Michael Jordan was Michael Jordan. That's why Larry Bird is Larry Bird. That's why none of these players are. Because it's a fundamental generational disconnect in the way that you look at things like failure and success and what constitutes both of those things.
Man, you know, it's so, again, you said a lot there, and it is interesting, isn't it? I didn't expect to go in this direction, but it's become a recurring theme in this conversation. I look at, because what we're talking about are values and character. And what I see, what we're talking about, and it's so weird because I try not to, again, like you, I don't want to be like the old man screaming at everything, but we grew up in this era where it wasn't just guys like Jordan or Kobe. I mean, we also had, you know, Michael Jordan and Mike Tyson and Michael Jackson, all these Michaels. We had all these megastars, Denzel Washington, like in all these different fields who just were clearly peerless and second to none and above the rest. And what you find when you look into each of their stories is this just ruthless, relentless drive and work ethic and this ambition to succeed and to be the best. And now, you know, I look at, they like, people use the word soft, and I don't want to insult people, but at the same time, it seems in some ways like we're victims of our own success and our own comfort. And it seems like everywhere in society, we can see what's happening, these ramifications, including professional sports, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe it is the money, but again, I just don't, you know, I saw the same drive, the same desire from Jordan, from Kobe into their mid-30s, despite the fact they were, you know, set up, they were established. I look at a guy like Tom Brady, who, again, this guy, what does this guy not have? What has this guy not accomplished? And yet the seasons, his final playoff runs with Tampa Bay, it was killing him. Like people say he might've divorced his wife just to play one final year. I mean, the guy was so obsessed and so consumed with competing and the process of winning and being the best and doing it the right way, despite the fact he was worth $500 million. He has everything that he could need. Now, obviously he's our age, or maybe even a couple years older here. He's a couple years older than me, but so again, I think it just is this generational disconnect where I don't want to blame the social media sphere, but I feel like it is somewhat tied in, because I grew up outside of that probably by at least 5 to 10 years. Social media really wasn't on. I was, you know, well into college basically when Facebook first hit, which was like the predecessor. But I feel like I don't know what the messaging is that's going on there, but it's disconnected certain values, I think. And for whatever reason, there's also, I don't want to call the generation today lazy, but I see a lot of people that are unwilling to work. And that's in the standard workforce. That's even, look, you mentioned Denzel Washington. I am a huge movie fan as well. Like I'm a big Tom Cruise guy. The lengths that Tom Cruise is going to now in his 60s, doing every stunt, like putting in 15-hour days, like most of the stars today are just I mean, they're just TikTok models, basically, that don't really want to put forth the effort that these guys have given. And it just, like you said, it transcends. I think it's a societal commentary, not just sports, not just entertainment in general. But I mean, looking around, just taking a cursory glance at the workforce in general, you know, it just seems like there's not a lot of people that have been instilled with that drive and that work ethic.
I know, it's really fascinating. And I love that you mentioned Tom Cruise because he's actually one of my favorite movie stars. People ask me, like, you love Tom Cruise? I'm like, yes, I love Tom Cruise.
Me
First of
too.
all, I mean, you know, he's so electric on screen, but that guy works his butt off and he doesn't have to. And he is bold, he takes risks with his body, and he's always trying to outdo, you know, himself. He's like, what's going to look cool on screen? What's going to be exciting for an audience to watch? And he's pushing and pushing and pushing himself. And you know, and guys like Denzel, I mean, there is a the rumor is that when he was playing Malcolm X, he was so he knew Malcolm so thoroughly that he even knew what prescription glasses he was wearing. I mean, you read about his preparation for these things. And now there just doesn't seem to be that appetite, that kind of hunger to maybe stand out, to achieve, to compete. And this is something I never thought where I'd go, but I do notice, you know, it's a popular topic of conversation. Not popular, but it's a subterranean but popular topic of conversation, but you know, the denigration of males and men of masculinity. And I have to point out that when I look at someone like LeBron James and the way that he conducts himself versus how Kobe and how MJ conducted themselves, both of those guys had, I mean, MJ especially had a very, very, very powerful father figure in his life, and LeBron just didn't. And I wonder if what we're talking about, what we're dancing around in terms of a society-wide issue, is this, we're seeing the after effects in some way of the denigration of men and male achievement, this idea of traits like tenacity, courage, aggression, competition, ambition, the drive for success. Like you pointed out, I mean, these taken to an extreme can be bad, and we know this from looking at Kobe and especially MJ stories, but at the same time, it's part of what made these men who they are. And I feel like I'm rambling. I mean, do you think I'm kind of getting at something here that that part of the generational thing is that these younger athletes were raised in a society where, in which, how can I put this? I don't want to say where male achievement has been dismissed because a lot of leftists would disagree with that, but maybe male drives have been neutered, so to speak, and dampened, and maybe that's part of what we're seeing. I mean, if we're talking like it's a big thing, and I'm rambling on, but I don't know where that goes. But just save me. What do you think about any of what I just said?
No, I think you make great points. Because yes, these a lot of the traits that really are required to do great things are now viewed as negative emoters, right? Like aggression, tenacity. I mean, there is an inherent sacrifice about being great. You referenced The Last Dance, which is just a tremendous. It's one of the best docuseries I've ever seen. And there's such a powerful moment in that where you also referenced Jordan's father. He was so close with his father. It was absolutely crushing to him when his father was murdered. He left and pursued baseball for a year and a half. And actually, when he came back and they won that in the 95-96, they won the 72. They were 72-10 that year. They won and won the championship. And that was on Father's Day when he clinched the championship. And there's just that iconic image of him sobbing, just weeping on the ground with his face down, like holding the trophy. And it was just such a powerful moment in The Last Dance to see him discussing his father without really losing control of his emotions. Now, 20 years later, or however long it's been since he's lost his father, as they say, you know, time heals all wounds. So he was able to discuss his dad, talk about his dad's murder and all that without really ever, you know, breaking down or showing emotion. However, he breaks down when he's talking about the sacrifice, about how he couldn't be a good teammate. And because he had the responsibility to lift these guys onto his level. And he knows that he wasn't a great person during times of his career because he saw that that was the necessity to get them to where they needed to be. And Kobe Bryant, same exact mentality. There was a story that came out about 10 years ago about him making one of his teammates, Smush Parker, get changed in a broom closet during the 2005-2006 season. And there was some criticism from Smush's part. And Kobe came back, posted this thing on his Facebook page at the time at like 3 o'clock in the morning. And it was just basically about how he sees the responsibility of being great. That it doesn't mean making you feel good all the time. That it doesn't mean making you feel comfortable. It means making you uncomfortable and uplifting you, challenging you to be the best that you possibly can. And he didn't care if he was remembered as a good guy or a good teammate. He wanted to be known as a winner. So there is this inherent sacrifice that I think is needed. And we're talking about like the alpha mindset, the alpha mentality. And quite frankly, I try on my sports, on my platform, I try to veer away from political discourse or kind of you. People could probably guess which way I lean if they watch my content closely enough. But yeah, absolutely. I think we live in a society today in the United States of America where these traits have been belittled, diminished, and in some senses vilified. Like it's almost a bad thing to be overtly masculine or have this alpha mentality about yourself and to kind of carry yourself with this domineering outlook, which is quite frankly, essential to be great in sports. Now, it might not be essential to be great in everything else, but it certainly is definitively needed to be a dominator of sports leagues. And that's a great point that maybe that's why we simply aren't seeing it.
Yeah, and it's so bizarre because, you know, I also look at when those traits are present in athletes like a Caitlin Clark, a Clark or a Serena Williams, I say, good Lord, this is one of the greatest competitors that I've ever seen. And it's so exciting to watch. But it, you know, maybe there's a longer conversation about how we feel about winning and if we're truly, I mean, and I thought this about acting and other arenas as well. You know, are we even a society that is capable? Like someone asked, you know, I think about actors like Laurence Olivier or Denzel Washington. And I think to myself, these are two of the most celebrated actors of the 20th century. Do we even have a culture now? Like people ask, you know, where's the next one? Do we have any more greats? And they, you know, and they'll come along. But do we even have a culture that can produce people like that who have the drive and ambition to even reach those kinds of heights? But maybe we'll never know. Mr. Skapanak, it's been such a pleasure connecting with you. How can people find you and support you if they wish to do so?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. I'm so glad that we could connect and have this conversation. Right now, I'm still kind of at the infancy of my journey and what I'm doing. So I'm really just kind of getting started. I'm on YouTube as Skap Attack, which is just SKAP space attack. That is also my Twitter handle, which I'm kind of getting ramping up my activity on that platform. I'm not really plugged in all the way yet on there. And right now that's it. So if you want to come and check me out on YouTube, you can do it at Skap Attack, or you can probably talk to me a little more, a little more one-on-one, so to speak. I get more attention on Twitter if you want to throw me a follow on there.